My mom used to make tomato sandwiches.
Yeah.
Tomato sandwich. Mayonnaise, some salt and pepper. Delicious.
My kid just wants the tomato on bread. He doesn't even care if you put the mayonnaise on it.
It's a cheap meal.
Yeah.
If you could get like a beefsteak tomato for like $1.
He just recently tried a banana sandwich.
I've never had that. Is it good? Do you put mayonnaise on it?
Yeah. Duke's mayonnaise. Has to be Duke's.
I do own Duke's mayonnaise. I'm Southern now, so.
Duke's mayonnaise. White bread.
We're talking about Duke Energy.
Right. I wonder. Duke
mayonnaise.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think they're from South Carolina.
Mm.
The Duke people there. Maybe related to them.
Maybe. I was just curious. Oh, snap. Well, hi, everybody. I'm Sarah.
Hi, I'm Alicia.
And this is Sinister States. Thank you for giving me the little one. Because I have an okay case this time. So this time we're in Georgia.
Georgia.
I like the Georgia.
The ATL.
The ATL. I like the Georgia football team's mascot.
The Bulldog?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I wanted a Bulldog for a hot second. Lewis wants a Bulldog. They're big, beefy, and lazy. But I couldn't deal with the breathing and the back problems. Yeah, I couldn't do that. Well, not even just that. They choke a lot.
Yeah.
They can't breathe. Their backs hurt because they're so beefy. They don't really jump, so you kind of got to, like, I guess they do, but, like...
You don't want to have to hoist them.
Yeah, I'm not hoisting them up on the bed or on our couch. I'm not doing that. But they're so cute and beefy. And their mascot is, like, white, and he's so cute.
Isn't that the kind of dog that Jelly Roll and his wife had?
Probably. I don't like Jelly Roll, so I'm not sure. Well, I don't... But
I mean, I just see their,
like... I think so. I don't... What I mean by I don't like Jelly Roll is I haven't invested the time to see what kind of animal him and his wife have.
Yeah.
So, that's why I don't know. Not anything like, oh, I hate Jelly Roll, don't bring him up. Just, I don't know. I don't look at pictures of him and his family. I know his wife's name is Bunny.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Which I think her real name is Brittany, but...
I know, like, I see the TikToks, and she's always had the little dog with her, and his name's Chachi, and that's what it is, isn't it?
No, that's a... No. That's a pit bull of some sort. That is a pit bull.
I don't know. He's adorable, though.
Sure. This is the Georgia...
He's really short, though. Mm-hmm. That's what made me kind of think... I don't know. I just know that the dog is adorable, and he's, like... Like, you can tell, like, you ever
this
see...
is him.
Oh, okay.
That's a bulldog. That's an English bulldog.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
That's a pit bull of some sort.
I wasn't sure.
Which I'm pretty sure a pit bull is a mix between a bulldog and something else.
I just saw the short stature, like, the little bulldogs.
Yeah.
I just know that theirs is, like, really, like, in that picture he looks... But he's really...
But yeah, this is the... Georgia mascot. Oh, he's so cute.
They look like they can be related.
His name is Q. His name is Q. Q-U-E, and I love him, and he's so cute. But they're, like, super beefy, and I love it. But we are in Georgia.
In Georgia.
So I'm gonna go ahead and... Start with our missing person. Sorry, I thought I heard Zorro squeaking his toy downstairs. He was a second ago. He has a hamburger toy that he absolutely adores. You saw the burger.
Mm-hmm.
He loves that thing. He's had it for 6 weeks and he hasn't destroyed it, which is amazing. But his favorite thing in the world is to squeak it. And I don't know, but it's the loudest thing in the world at 6:30 in the morning. And I don't know why he incessantly squeaks it at 6:30 in the morning, but he does. But anyway, so
who's that? That's Bussy the Bus Dog. I saw what they were talking about it the other day.
He's a basset hound.
Yeah. The dog lives on the bus with him. He goes on tour with him everywhere he goes.
He doesn't know he's famous, but he's famous.
He's a famous little bus, and his name is Bussy the Bus Dog.
And he's a basset hound.
He's a basset hound. Is that not adorable?
That's another breed of dog I would consider getting as a basset hound, because I really like their floppy ears and their long bodies.
Yeah. Sorry, but off of animals again. Sorry.
No, you're good. So this is the missing person, Katrina Renee Jackson. They're assuming that she was born, or not assuming, I'm sorry. What? Oh, because there's no pictures on here. It's supposed to be photos. It says Katrina circa 1986, and I was like, Are they assuming that she went missing in 1986? No, that's not the case. I'm just blind. So her name is Katrina Renee Jackson. She's missing from Sylvania, Georgia. She's been missing since May 30th of 1986. So that's what the 86 was from. Her date of birth is February 11th, 1973. So she would be 51 years old as of right now. The classification is non-family abduction. She is a white female. And at the time of her disappearance, she was 13 years old, approximately between 5'3" and 5'5", and 120 to 140 pounds. At the time of her disappearance, she was wearing a black t-shirt with the image of a sailboat and Daytona or Daytona Beach imprinted on the front, blue jeans, blue sneakers, and a wristband imprinted with her nickname Renee, which that's her middle name. Some distinguishing characteristics: she has brown hair, hazel eyes, she has moles across her back, her ears are pierced, and she may go by her middle name, which is Renee, but her first name is Katrina. And details of her disappearance, it's extremely short, but it says Katrina was last seen leaving her sister's Sylvania, Georgia residence at 6:30 a.m. on May 30th, 1986 to walk to school. She never arrived for classes and has not been seen again, and few details are available in her case, but it is classified as a non-family abduction. And that's it.
Yep. It was a short one, though.
Yeah, but that is Katrina Renee. What was her last name? Sorry.
Jackson.
Jackson. So, if anybody knows anything about her, please let us know. Well, don't let us know, because I can't really help you, but please let somebody know. And then, keeping on the kid theme, because she was only 13, my case is, I'm just going to give a disclaimer, it is very sad, and it does deal with a child murder. So, if that's not what you're up for and not what you're interested in, please click off. We have many other episodes and there are many other podcasts out there that you can listen to, but this case may not be for you. So just a little disclaimer, but this is going to be the murder of Imani Moss. You ever heard of this?
I have not.
Okay, so a little background on Imani. So Imani Gabrielle Moss was born April 23rd, 2003. And shortly after Imani's birth, her mother, who was addicted to drugs, surrendered her parental rights, and Imani's father, Iman, gained sole custody of her. Imani was one of five children born to her mother, and her mother surrendered parental rights to all of her children. Iman was charged with and convicted of battery and second-degree child cruelty in 2004 after beating Imani's biological mother in front of her. So, little background on that. So, Iman largely raised Imani and often took her to the Freedom Christian Church. There, he met a woman named Tiffany Moss, a preschool teacher. Iman and Tiffany married in July of 2009, and together they had two children, a son and a daughter. Though there are no records indicating that Tiffany abused her biological children, she did abuse Imani. So, this is her stepmother. The abuse increased in March of 2010 after a beating of Imani caused Moss to lose her job. Imani, then age 6, told a school nurse that she feared going home with a bad report card because she worried her parents would hurt her. She also told the nurse that her stepmother had spanked her with a curtain rod. Yeah. The nurse then found multiple scabs, bruises, and welts on Imani's arms, back, chest, legs, and shoulders, and Imani was taken to the police headquarters. Tiffany was arrested and charged with first-degree child cruelty. Tiffany admitted to hitting Imani 3 times after she failed to do her homework. She pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 5 years of probation as part of Georgia's first offender program. The Georgia Division of Family and Child Services signed the plea deal. The GDFCS, which is what I just said, dismissed a case against Tiffany and Iman after they completed parenting classes. After the March 2010 beating, Imani was taken from her father and stepmother's home and placed with her grandmother, Robin, staying with her for about 6 months. During this time, Imani's school performance improved. Iman fought for custody of Imani, and in the fall of 2010, the GDFCS returned her to him. Robin fought to retain custody of her granddaughter. Though she suspected Imani was being abused, she could not persuade authorities to give her custody. Prosecutors later argued at trial that the March 2010 abuse incident launched an escalating cycle of more abuse that ultimately resulted in Imani's death. Because Moss had pleaded guilty to beating Amani, she was no longer allowed to teach preschool. This made her resent Amani as she blamed her for the job loss.
Wow.
Yep.
Poor baby.
I know. Moss continued to abuse Amani for the next several years. In July of 2012, Amani twice tried to run away from home. In one case, she went to the apartment office and told them that she wanted to run away because Moss had tied her up with a belt and placed her in a cold shower. The police responded and were told by Moss that Amani was not telling the truth. Because there was not enough evidence to charge anyone, Amani was returned to Amon and Moss. And by the way, Moss's first name is Tiffany, if you forgot that already. So it's Iman, the father, and Tiffany Moss, the stepmother. In another July 2012 incident, Amani ran away and was found sleeping in the bushes of a nearby apartment complex by a police officer. Amani told the officer that she had run away because her stepmother was mean to her. The officer reported the event to the GDFCS and filed runaway and curfew violation charges against Amani to ensure she would see a juvenile court judge. From 2011 to the summer of 2013, the Moss family moved around, sometimes living with family. Amon, who worked long hours, did not see his daughter often. He later reported at trial that she would eat a lot when he saw her on the weekends when he was in charge of the children. When the Mosses lived on their own, Amani rarely saw extended family. In May 2013, the Mosses visited Amon's sister, Sharonice's house for Mother's Day. Sharonice and Robin noticed that Imani's hair had been cut. When Robin confronted Moss about it, Moss reportedly said, "If you act ugly, you should look ugly." Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Sharonice also noticed that Amani acted more timidly. After the 2012-2013 school year ended, Amon and Moss announced that they would pull Amani from public school and homeschool her. Sharonice objected to the idea and called the GDFCS, asking them to intervene. Still, they declined. On August 6, 2013, the GDFCS received an anonymous tip that Amani was being neglected by her father and stepmother and appeared to be too thin. According to a lawsuit against the GDFCS filed by Robin, the GDFCS did not visit the home and did not conduct a follow-up due to having no current address and no current maltreatment indicated. So that's all the stuff leading up to what ultimately would kill Amani. So, on Mother's Day, May 12th, 2013, the last time that any family members of Amani's, besides her father, stepmother, and siblings, saw her alive, so it was on Mother's Day, in the late summer of 2013, Iman, Tiffany Moss, their children, and Amani moved to an apartment in Lawrenceville, Georgia. According to District Attorney Danny Porter, this was when, for all intents and purposes, Amani vanished from the face of the earth. During this time, Iman worked two jobs, making him largely absent from Amani's life. He would leave for his first job in the early morning, briefly return in the late afternoon, and then leave for his second job around 6 p.m. before finally returning at around 10:30 or 11 p.m. While Amon was at work, Moss was left to care for the children. So mind you, they have two biological children and Imani, so all three of them. At some point, Moss began to starve Amani. According to prosecutors, the starvation likely lasted several weeks. During this time, Amani was confined to her bedroom. Neighbors only saw Moss's biological children and did not know that they actually had an older sister. Amani eventually became too weak to move and could not leave her bed, urinate, or defecate. Though Moss denied food to Amani, she did take care of and feed her two biological children. On several occasions, she sent Amon pictures of meals that she had prepared for her children, and in another instance, she asked her husband to bring home cookie dough so she could bake. At trial, prosecutors pointed out that Amani would have had to smell the baked cookies as she lay in her room starving to death. According to Dr. Staffenberg, the medical examiner who testified at trial, the process of starvation to death would have been painful. At first, Amani would have experienced hunger pains. She then would have become fatigued, and she would continue losing energy and weight until she ultimately died. In the early evening of October 24, 2013, Amani suffered what Amon believed was a seizure. Amon testified that when he came home, Moss told him something was wrong with Amani. He then went into the bathroom and found his daughter in the bathtub shaking. Amani was unresponsive and her eyes were rolling back and forth. Iman moved Amani to her bed, where she stayed for the next couple of days. Iman visited her during this time and tried to feed her, but was unsuccessful. Amani ultimately died on October 28th, 2013. By the time Amani died, she was severely underweight, with Dr. Staffenberg describing her as more or less skin and bones. She weighed only 32 pounds, which is the weight of an average three-year-old, which, if we do math, she was born in 2003, so she was 10 years old. And she weighed as much as a three-year-old.
My son is 9, and he currently weighs 106 pounds.
Yeah. And she only weighed 32 pounds. Additionally, her organs were found at autopsy to be abnormally small as well. On October 28th, Moss called Iman at work to tell him that Amani was dead. Iman testified at trial that when he came home from work, the family seemed normal, with the children playing and Moss watching TV. He found his daughter lying on a blanket on her bedroom floor. He told his wife they should call the police, though she insisted they couldn't because she would lose her children. Moss told Iman they needed to hide Amani's body and be on her criminal mind. Iman wrapped Amani's body with blankets and moved her to the computer room. The couple kept Amani's body in their apartment for several days, and their lives largely went back to normal. Iman testified at trial that he would go to work and spend time at home with Amani's body grieving. Is that not disgusting? That's like some Norman Bates level shit, if you ask me. I'm saying shit because it's shit.
It makes me think that there was maybe some... He's probably upset with himself that he didn't do anything any sooner.
Well, the thing about it was, is I would have told her, okay, why are you so worried about losing the kids?
Right. At this point, like, you couldn't even...
Like, my daughter is dead. Right. That would have been my reaction. Like, yes, they have two children together, but that's still his biological daughter. Like, right. What are you doing, dude?
Yeah.
So, now we're going to get into the nitty-gritty stuff, as if that wasn't bad enough. So... The Moss couple agreed to cover up Amani's death. The day after Amani's death, Moss went to Anna's Linens, which is a store, and bought new sheets and a new coverall, as the ones Amani had used were covered with excrement and urine. Moss suggested burying Amani and reporting her as a runaway. Iman went to Walmart and bought a galvanized trash can, trash bags, charcoal, and lighter fluid. On Halloween, Moss and Iman decided to put Amani's body in the trash can and burn it. When they tried to place her in the trash can, they found that she was stiff with rigor mortis and used duct tape to compress her body. Iman covered her with a comforter. The Mosses then stuffed Amani's body in the trash bag. In the early morning of November 1st, the Moss couple put the trash can containing Amani's body in the back of their car and took their children to find a place to burn it. Mind you, they're taking their kids with them. Like, this is their sister. That's insane. And she's only, like, 6 years older than them, so they're, like, probably 3 and 4, 2 and 4. Like, the four-year-old probably knows what's going on.
They probably remember, still to this day.
That's insane. Okay. So, they found a secluded location to commit the arson and removed the trash can from the vehicle. They added charcoal briquettes to the bottom of the can, doused Amani's body with the lighter fluid, and set it on fire.
That poor baby.
Mm-hmm. As the couple watched the body burn, they found it would not burn to ash. After about 5 minutes, they extinguished the fire and took the trash can and Amani's body back to the apartment.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Yep. Insanity. Yeah. The day after attempting to burn Amani's body, Iman went to work with Amani's body still in the back of his car. He confessed to a friend about the crime. The friend urged him to call the police. Iman thought about it, and after coming home from his second job, he decided to contact the police. At 4 a.m., he made the call, saying he was suicidal. Iman informed Moss about his call to the police. Upon learning that the police had been called, Moss placed the trash can with Amani's remains in a grassy area at the apartment and fled in the family vehicle with her children. Upon arrival at the apartment, the police were told by Iman that Amani had drunk some chemicals and died. He claimed that he had panicked and put her body in a trash can outside the apartment and tried to cremate it. Police found the body and did not believe Iman's story, quickly identifying him and his wife as suspects. Iman was arrested almost immediately. Moss dropped her children off at her mother's house and ultimately turned herself in. Iman ultimately confessed to covering up Amani's murder by reporting her as a runaway and trying to burn her body. In 2015, he pled guilty to felony murder and concealing a death. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In exchange, he agreed to testify against Moss, who rejected a plea deal that would have allowed her to be sentenced to life in prison. Amon is currently incarcerated at the Smith State Prison in Glenville, Georgia. The case against Moss instead went to trial. So Moss's trial began on April 15th, 2019, and was presided over by Judge George Hutchinson. The jury consisted of 6 men and 6 women. Moss, who was appointed lawyer through the State Office of the Capital Defender, decided to represent herself, despite Judge Hutchinson's efforts to persuade her otherwise. Instead of representing her, her defense attorney served as standby attorneys to answer any legal questions. During pretrial hearings and jury selection, Judge Hutchinson urged Moss to rely upon the standby counsel, but she refused. Moss did not give an opening statement, nor did she cross-examine any witnesses or give a closing argument. District Attorney Danny Porter and Assistant District Attorney Lisa Jones called 18 witnesses, including Amani's aunt, grandmother, and fourth-grade teacher. They also called Amon and Dr. Staffenberg, the medical examiner who performed an autopsy on Amani's body. So sad. On April 29th, Moss was convicted on all 6 counts, including 1 count of malice murder, 2 counts of felony murder, 2 counts of cruelty to children, and 1 count of concealing a death. The jury deliberated for less than 3 hours. During the sentencing phase, Moss declined to address the jury, present mitigating evidence, or have her relatives who had attended the trial testify on her behalf. She also refused to make a closing statement. In the state's closing argument, Porter argued that Moss did not deserve a life sentence, whether it be a life sentence with parole or a life without parole sentence. She should not be given the opportunity to be released, he argued, because she would never change. Quote, she's shown you too much of her capacity for cruelty. There will always be the dark side waiting to come out. He also argued that for Moss, life without parole would not be a worse sentence than death because she did not regret her crimes and would never be bothered by them. After closing arguments, the jury began deliberating. After the first day, they appeared conflicted and were told by Judge Hutchinson to go home and sleep on it. They continued deliberations the next day and ultimately agreed on the death penalty as a punishment for Moss. Sentencing occurred on May 1st, 2019, and Judge Hutchinson agreed with the jury's recommendation and sentenced Moss, then age 36, to death by lethal injection. Moss was the first person to be sentenced to death in Georgia in over 5 years. Judge Hutchinson.
Get it, Judge.
Right? Judge Hutchinson scheduled her execution for between June 7th and 14th of 2019. Porter said of the death sentence, quote, there's no joy when a jury imposes a death sentence, but this was one of the worst cases I've ever seen. The first time you look at it, it made you sick. And the last time you look at it, it still makes you sick. The execution did not occur during the June 7th to 14th time frame due to the appeals process, which resulted in an automatic stay of execution being applied to the initial scheduled execution date. She is currently incarcerated at Arundale State Prison and is Georgia's only female death row inmate. If Moss is eventually executed, she will be the third woman in Georgia to be executed since 1945. Despite representing herself at trial, Moss accepted legal representation in her appeal. Soon after she was sentenced to death, the Georgia Capital Defender Group filed a motion asking for a new trial, arguing, among other things, that Moss was not competent to act as her own attorney. According to her attorneys, Moss has neuropsychological testing data that showed the defendant to have damage to the premotor and prefrontal regions of the brain. A status hearing regarding the motion was held on August 23rd, 2019. So Iman and Moss, who remained married, lost custody of their other 2 children after Imani's murder. The children were sent to live with foster parents. The Moss couple, along with both Moss and Iman's mothers, tried to gain custody. In 2019, Porter told local news that the children were adopted by their foster parents. The couple's son, who was 3 years old when Amani was murdered, reportedly did have some memories of the crime. However, according to Porter, at the time of the interview in April of 2019, the children were doing great and may actually never remember what happened. And then finally, a legacy. So Amani's murder led to criticism of and systemic changes in Georgia's child welfare system. After the murder, an intake case manager, a social services administrator, and a program assistant at the GDFS were all terminated. Others were also reportedly disciplined. The murder led the department to enact reforms, including deeper investigations into allegations of abuse and changing how it assembles maltreatment reports. New case managers and supervisors were hired, reducing caseloads. Agency workers no longer decide whether reports warrant investigations based entirely on information gathered over the telephone. Additionally, no case is assigned a less serious, lower priority status until a caseworker meets a child who allegedly has been abused. After Imani's death, along with several other abuse-related deaths, the Child Welfare Reform Council was commissioned by Governor Nathan Deal. In January of 2015, the council released a report with recommendations on ways to improve Georgia's child welfare system. In 2018, Imani's grandmother, Robin, filed a lawsuit in the Gwinnett County State Court against the GDFS, arguing that caseworkers were aware of deteriorating conditions and abuse in the Moss family and could have acted earlier. Robin is also suing the Department of Human Services. She is seeking a jury trial and reasonable compensatory.
Okay.
I always struggle with that word.
I was like, are we talking about compensation?
We are, but a different form of the word. So reasonable compensatory damages. According to the lawsuit, there were multiple occasions where the department could have investigated the Moss household and intervened on behalf of Imani. Quote, as a result of the negligence of DFCS and its agents, Imani suffered constant abuse and deprivation from 2008 until her untimely death. The lawsuit also states, quote, as a direct and proximate result of defendant's wrongful conduct, plaintiff is entitled to recover for the wrongful death of Imani, including the full value of the economic and non-economic value of her life that she had lived. And that is the murder of Imani Moss.
That poor baby. She deserved so much better.
She did. And she didn't even do anything wrong except come into this world and her mama didn't want her. And honestly, props to her mother for knowing that she didn't want to be a mom and signing over rights as opposed to just taking her in. I mean, I'm not here to say one way or another, but at least she was honest with herself from the beginning and gave up all of her children. It just sucks that her daddy then found this horrible woman. And the fact that she worked at a preschool.
You would be amazed, though. Kids, like, oh, poor baby.
I feel so bad for her. And the fact that, like, her own dad helped burn her body. Like, I understand that you can be afraid of losing your kids. But your wife,
like, you
killed your baby that isn't even hers.
Right. And obviously, she had been, I mean, the little girl was, what, 10?
10, when she died.
When she died. So.
But she met Tiffany Moss. She became her stepmother when she was 3.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you basically, like, as, like, first of all, I'm a firm believer that if you want to be with someone who has kids, those are your kids then. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to be with somebody who has kids, those are your kids too. Yeah. I mean, I'll fight for a kid whether it's mine or not. Show out somewhere's in front of me. I promise we'll be in the fight in the middle of the Walmart store. Like if I were to see somebody mistreating a baby like that in public, don't think I wouldn't go at them.
Mm-mm.
I would come at somebody in a hot stance, I promise.
Yeah.
Like what was it? I don't know if you saw the TikToks. Have you seen the TikToks where they're asking the women, would you kill for your kid? Have you seen those?
I have.
And some women are like, oh, no. And then there's some women who are like, yes, I would kill for my kid.
My question your kid is, too. Would you kill for your son?
Would I kill for Ethan? Oh, you're darn skipping.
Here's my thing, though. Here's my question on that. As somebody that isn't a mom, and it's not a dig, I'm curious.
Yeah.
For the women that say no, and they're like, I don't know if I could do that. Like, I don't know if I could take a human life. My question to you is you say yes right off the bat, no problem.
Yes.
But why would you leave your son without a mother?
So
I'm just curious. Like, no, it's not a date. I just want to know the psychology behind it.
So here's my thought. Is if somebody hurts my child,
mm-hmm.
if I find out that, like, say, somebody essayed my child.
I was going to say, yeah.
I would gladly take them out of this world.
Well, I think that all...
But, I mean, I'm just saying in general.
Predators like that so, should go down.
But I mean, it's one of those things. It would depend on what that circumstance was. You know what I'm saying? But yes, if need be, yes, I would.
I was just curious because, like,
No.
I can understand, like, I understand when you're like, yes, like, that's my kid. That's my sole purpose is to protect them and make sure
Right.
that they're okay. But I also, when I listen to stuff like that, because I've seen those videos, like, of
Yeah.
people being like, I don't think so. It really makes me think because it's like, while you say yes in the moment and you might act on that and actually kill for your kid, you're now either in bars, for, like, behind bars for life, or you're getting the death
Right.
penalty, so your kid doesn't have a mom. So
So.
I'm just wondering how that works, because your sole purpose is not to leave your child without a mother, but
Right.
that's what would
But
happen.
I'm just saying in general, like, yeah.
Yeah.
I
Like,
mean, as
I'm not
bad as
saying
it
anything.
sounds,
I get
yeah,
it.
like, I love my husband very much, but it's like, I would take out my husband over my child. Like, I'm just being
Well,
honest.
Scott has lived without you. Like, not to be that person.
Yeah.
Like, you know that he lived his life without you. He did what he needed to do. But your son is a child and he doesn't know a world without his
Yeah.
parents. Like,
Yeah.
if it came down to, am I
Yeah.
gonna kill for my kid or my husband? I'm gonna kill for my kid. And if you get, you better learn to fight, Scott. You better learn.
No, I'm just saying in general, like I would yeah, no, I
I'm just
would, I
curious.
mean, and that's
But that's
just
like, this, like, seeing what your wife was doing to your child, not even
right.
her child, your child,
I
like,
can
why did
tell
you not
you.
step in?
Like, and that's just, that's like me with these people who, you know, like they come in and they find that their kid has shaken baby syndrome, you know, that their partner has, you know, hurt their child or injured. No, I promise you, if I were to walk into my house and that were the instance, I promise you, only one of us is going to be walking out. And I'm going to be walking out in cuffs and smiling in my mugshot. Right.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, There are certain things I don't play about. And I'm like, you better pray with me, don't play with me. And that's like as bad as it sounds. Yesterday, we had these two little boys. We passed them. They were like teenagers. They look like they're probably about 17, 18, something like that. We were getting ready to take Eden to my mom's house. As we drove by, they saw us leaving out of our house. Like they saw me backing out and everything. Supposedly they were going to our neighbor's house. Next thing I know, we get an alert from our carport. These two little kids are starting down our driveway. What are you doing at my house? You got no business at my house. And Scott's like, I was like, I'm turning around. Scott's like, no. He said, I'll just, and so we've got a camera that you can like
Talk
voice.
through, yeah.
Scott told him, said, go on, don't even think about it. Da, 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 da. I'm like, no. I turned around, I went back. I'm like, can I help you with something? I saw you coming down my driveway. Is there anything I can help you with? No, ma'am. No. We're just waiting on our friend here. I'm like, I was like, well, if you need something, you can go ahead and ask me. I was like, because you had no reason to be in my driveway or in my yard. Like, I don't play. Like, I'm one of those people, as bad as it sounds, you come in my house in the dead of night. If the dog don't get you, I will shoot you. Like,
This is the South.
that's just how I am. Like, I'm sorry. Like,
No, but yeah, so
No, I mean, I just,
I'm just so baffled by this case, like,
and I mean, I'm like that by anybody's kid, though. I
but that's
would,
why I'm so baffled, like, the
I would,
fact of the matter is that,
I,
like,
as bad as it sounds, I would kill somebody. If you had a kid, I would kill somebody if I saw somebody being mean to your kid or hurting your child. Like, I would,
I would step
it's
in for
not
any of my
just,
friends' kids or
that's
my
what I'm
nieces and
saying. Like,
nephews.
no, you.
Like, if somebody messes with Ethan and you're not around, you and Scott aren't around, like, you left him with me for a minute.
I'll gladly go to jail. I will drop the hammer.
Oh,
I
yeah.
may not weigh as much as I used to, but I promise I will kick you in the kneecap and I'll take you down. I will
Because,
fight for anybody's
yeah.
babies. That's just how I am,
That's how
but
I am with anybody's kids that I know,
yeah.
though. Like, anybody. I could know you for a month. If your kids are in my custody for even 2 minutes and something happens to them, I don't even care how old they are. They could be 17 years old. I don't care. That's my baby at that point. Like, Blake and Leanne's children, every single one of them. I know that their kids range in age. They got older teenagers all the way down to babies, but those are my
They're
babies.
so sweet.
Those are my babies, my nieces and nephews. They're, well, my nephew, I have one. But, like, I don't have to have children to
right.
defend
and that's what I'm saying, like,
children.
You know, yeah. But it was funny. Speaking of them, the youngest one, I'm not going to say his name
on here.
Yeah,
we don't say their names.
We don't say names. But the youngest one, he said, my daddy plays I want to say he's saying a guitar. The way he said it was the cutest.
I love his voice.
He was like, he's playing a guitar. He plays it here. I'm like, oh my gosh.
This is Wednesday?
Yes. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're just tugging at my heartstrings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to need you to back away.
He's so sweet.
Because I'm going to be ready to go have another one just so I can have another little one. But I ain't got time for that, so no.
He was showing me the dinosaur on his shirt on Sunday.
Yeah.
And he was like, this is a Triceratops. I love it. I'm like, which one's your favorite? He goes, T-Rex, but they have little arms. And I love the way he talks.
That's what I'm saying.
But he can say so many big words.
I know.
And I'm like, you're almost four.
You're a baby.
You're a baby.
You're a baby over here talking like you're in.
Don't give that boy a chocolate bar either.
Why?
I got a picture here. I'll show you. I love this picture of him. His grandma got a chocolate bar for Christmas, right?
Uh-huh.
It's a big one. Wait a minute. Let me find it.
So you guys are like, I know
we will not be sharing photos of our
no, we're
children.
Not sharing any kind of pictures like that, but we're just talking in general about kids. It just amazes me that somebody could do that to a child. Like, I don't care. There's no excuse. I don't care what you say. There's no excuse to harm a child in any type of manner, unless
mm-hmm.
they're killing you. Like, if they're coming at you, if it's one of them that's coming at you with a knife, then
this was his grandmother's chocolate bar.
Oh my gosh, it's as big as his head.
Oh yeah, no, he stole it. I love him. He stole it and started eating it. Because it's fancy chocolate, but I love him for that. Like, look at how sweet.
Oh, he's in hog heaven, too. He's like,
oh yeah,
this,
he loves
he's like, this
it
is
too.
Mine, and it's going down.
Yeah, he's such a sweetheart. I love him so much.
Well, thank you for bringing that to us.
Don't thank me. I just wanted to
report. I mean, I had not heard it, so.
Me neither. And it's so recent, too. Like, 2019.
God, that was 5 years ago.
But anyway, yes.
Well, I mean, but in true crime world, that is very recent.
Yes, and that was very tragic, and I did not like it. But it needs to be talked about because the system failed that baby.
Yes.
Her auntie and her grandmother reported multiple times, and they refused to go and check on her. And that's the point of this whole case, is the system does not care about you, and that's the worst part. The system that was built to protect children does not care, and it's disgusting.
And then sometimes, too, as bad as it sounds, it's misused.
It is. Or they look at the wrong people.
Right. Yeah. Like, they worry. Like, did you see where that couple in Western North Carolina, or, yeah, they were in Western North Carolina, Asheville, they were talking about how they took their baby to a hospital in Asheville.
Mm-hmm.
And their baby got sick all at once. They noticed she had, like, a lump on the back of her neck. And they took her to the hospital, and they said that her injuries were consistent with basically abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But the baby had not been abused, and come to find out, it took them 15 months to finally get it figured out and do genetic testing. But she had a genetic disorder that caused all of those injuries, and she had never been abused at all.
Yeah, did you hear about the woman that, I cannot think of her name right now, but this mother, she ended up committing suicide because her daughter had complex regional pain syndrome, and she was on a pill form, I believe, of like some high, like disgustingly high grade pain medicine that was the only thing that helped. And her daughter was in the hospital, and the mom kept telling the hospital, like, I think it was during COVID too, she kept telling the hospital, like, my daughter has this syndrome, like, she needs this particular medication. And the daughter was 15. And she was, and the doctors were like, there's absolutely no way that your kid is having this kind of like pain. There's no way that she's on this medication. Like, you're forcing it to her. And they eventually barred her from the hospital where her daughter was a patient.
That's what happened to those people too. They got barred from seeing their daughter.
Well,
they basically kicked them out.
The daughter was in pain, and eventually they were able, like, after everything happened, and her mom committed suicide because she felt like, I can't take care of my daughter, there's nothing left to live for. Yeah. They found out after that, yes, the daughter does have complex regional pain syndrome. She is on this medication. It was prescribed by her family physician. This is the only thing that helps. Like, the mother was honest the whole time. And the family is suing the hospital now for a wrongful
death. But they get all the money.
But it just goes to show that, like, they will do anything. They'll insert themselves where it's not necessary, and they won't put their best foot forward when they
Well, I
need to.
mean, even me, okay, I'm gonna take it out that, like, I'm gonna give you guys a little insight to me. So when Scott and I first got married, I had worked with this lady, and her nephew was taken into DSS custody. He was 4.5 weeks at the time. They removed him from the mother's care because she had two open cases already in another county. Her other kids had been taken from her because she was doing drugs. She was doing meth, marijuana, all the things, you know. Meth being obviously the worst one. So this baby was born. He was born with, like, when they got to the hospital, he was born with marijuana in his system. She went out of state. She went to Tennessee to have him. She had him. He was born with marijuana in his system. Like, they said it was to the extent that basically she probably was smoking it on the way to the hospital.
Oh, wow.
So they contacted the DSS where we were living at that time. And he was placed with, so mom and dad, baby, move in with dad's, with the grandparents, the dad's mom and dad. Well, a couple weeks later, grandma finds out that grandpa might actually be the dad and not the dad. Yeah.
Oh.
So the aunt then, because they literally had nowhere to take him, the aunt took the baby in. And, you know, I told her, I was like, listen, and she was like, I can't keep him. My husband doesn't want me to keep him. You know, my husband doesn't want to raise any more kids. And so from there, Scott and I, you know, we were like, well, if you guys need us to try to take him, you know, we can try to take him. Like, Scott and I, we were newly married. We had a nice house, had 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, you know, had a decent house. So baby gets placed into foster care and they call us. They're like, can you try to take him? I'm like, sure, you know, we can. That's fine. So we get him. He was 6 weeks old. Actually got him on my birthday.
Oh.
So he was 6 weeks old. And when he came to us, he had RSV. He was taking nebulizer treatments. So we were having to give him nebulizer treatments 4 to 5 times a day. And we were having to take a nebulizer treatment back and forth to the daycare, everything that we got him in. So when we first got him, mom had had the WIC vouchers, of course. She'd already got all the formula and kept it. She basically sold the formula, I'm assuming, because she didn't have him, but she shorted and sent the formula with him. So Scott and I had to go out and buy formula for him. We bought the car seat that he rode in. We bought the bed that he slept in, like the pack and play. We bought everything that he had at our house. Because when he came to us from them, there was a diaper bag that smelled like cigarette smoke. His, you know how when the babies are born, they have the little paper in the front, like on the little thing?
Yeah, it says like who your doctor is, who
Yeah.
you are.
Well, the baby's name, the weight, and all that, it was folded up like not even like folded like this. It was like this, crammed up in front half of that diaper bag. Like they didn't even care enough to take that out. Like that's something you save.
Yeah, that's your
Bad as it
kid.
sounds, I still have it at my house. I have it in the baby book that I started for him when we had him. So we're gonna like, so that was in March. Fast forward to May. At that point, DSS had asked us to try to limit contact with family because I was told by DSS that if I were to let him go to his aunt's house and the aunt brought the mom around and they found out, they would remove him from our care. So DSS told me to cut contact with family. So I did that because their DSS has this child. Technically, it's their child at this point. You have to do what they say. So I did that. And then the aunt got mad at me. First of all, because the WIC vouchers, they had to go back and give us more formula for the baby because they found out that the mom had apparently gotten all of it and didn't send the formula with him. And then after that, the aunt came back in the picture and supposedly her husband told her she could get him back. So in the end, what happened was DSS took this baby from me and Scott and gave him back to the aunt who didn't want him in the first place.
Have you seen him since?
I actually ran into them in the summertime at my niece. It was actually back in August. My niece, it's her 5th birthday party, and they had it at the pool. And so I did, and I instantly knew who he was.
How
I
old is he
knew.
now? 10?
Yeah. I knew who he was. They didn't even have to tell me. I didn't even see the aunt. I saw him and I knew who he was. And I mean, I haven't seen him in 9 years.
Yeah.
But I knew who he
Does he
was.
look good? Healthy?
He looks healthy.
That's good.
So yeah, but I mean, he's it's sad. DSS sometimes it's like they don't care why they would take a child from a home where he was
Loved and cared for.
loved and cared for and getting everything that he needed and put him with somebody who originally told you their spouse didn't want him. Like, I always have wondered if he has received the kind of life that Scott and I had intended to give him if we got to keep him.
Yeah.
So, but
That's
yeah,
sad.
so when people talk about like losing a child, like I know it's not the same thing, but in a way, I have lost a child, it feels like.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I had this baby from the time he was a baby, and he was a sick baby when I got him. And we had him and we nursed him back to health and he was doing fine. He was a chunky little thing. We were chunking him up and just loving on him and we treated him like he was ours. But on a positive note, after that happened, Scott and I decided that, you know, maybe God just intended for us to tread the waters of being a parent. And so July of that same year, so like a month and a half later, I found out I was pregnant with Ethan.
And look at him now,
And look
nine.
at my little nugget.
And he's nine.
He's
Well,
9.
hopefully.
Sorry for that long tangent,
That's not
but
a tangent, it was a story.
I just wanted to tell you guys like a little bit, you know, like how DSS is. Sometimes they don't always do, in my opinion, what's in the best interest of a child.
No, that's definitely factual, but hopefully you guys found some information that you didn't know before. Thank you so much for sharing your story to go along with this story. Any parting words for the fans?
If you know of any children who are being abused, take it seriously. Kids
Yeah.
normally don't lie about things like that. So be a voice of the babies. So
Yeah. And anything else?
lock your doors and don't play with Ouija boards, guys.
Yes. And as always, there's probably something sinister right in your own backyard.
Bum bum bum.